At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to the EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. In today's show, we'll be talking about measuring performance of IT infrastructure components and how that relates to productivity. But before we dive into this performance monitoring, please allow us to introduce this episode's sponsor, iGel. iGel is the provider of a next-gen Edge OS for cloud workspaces, which provides a secure and high-performance managed endpoint operating systems, which runs on any device, including their own UD Pocket, and provides you access to Microsoft WVD, VMware, Amazon, Citrix, and you name it. My name is Ingmar Verheij, and I am your host for this episode. With me today is Johan van Amersfoort. Hey, Johan, what's up?
Hey, dude, I am seriously awesome. I got some news to share. I've been spending the last couple of months working on my new book, and it's really cool to see that something is really getting shape, right? So I think I'm already halfway there, and the really cool thing about the new book is that I'm going to have a lot of really awesome contributors. And some people just contributed little things, some did contribute bigger sections, and one of the contributors that is going to help me is someone that we had as a guest on the podcast and was one of my favorite episodes. Any idea who I might be talking about?
One of your favorite episodes. So I'm assuming you're not referring to the throwdown where, you know, Casey, it's, great guest. You're probably referring to like a proper podcast. If I have to make a guess, and it just has to be, and I you know, it's one of my most favorite recordings as well of last year. Is it a former CTO?
It is indeed a former CTO.
Wow. Is he a big fan of like Formula One?
Well, the fun thing is that he is a contributor to the section about gaming on VDI. And I have a really long feud with him on Twitter about who can drive the fastest lap on an F1 simulator running on VDI. Nice. He was one of the first to actually build that at Citrix. You guys obviously know that I'm talking about Christian Riley, and he's going to contribute in an interview around gaming on VDI, and that's going to be awesome.
That's super awesome. That is super cool. I mean, that's super cool. I mean, obviously your book is credible on its own with the content they use and author, but you know, having Christian Riley and other people reviewing it and contributing, that's just super awesome, man. That's cool. That's awesome. So yeah, I have way different things on my mind these days. It's so 107 is the number I'm going to give you. What do you think 107 is?
Days before we go out of a lockdown. Awesome. Days before we can have a drink on a bar, like somewhere. We might travel to another country.
Close.
So it's for synergy.
Close. So it's related. So it's actually the amount of days since I've been to the barber. So getting my haircut. And this evening is finally 107 days. Finally getting a haircut.
Awesome. Dude, I went yesterday. So I have like a... You guys can see it because we have cameras. And obviously you guys are... So the audience is listening, so they cannot see it. But I have a fresh like haircut. And my gray hairs are kind of faded away. So I'm happy, man.
Superman. It's, and you know, you start to appreciate little things in life. So anyhow, before we talk too much about men stuff, getting a haircut, before we introduce our guest... Did you find any interesting facts about our guest we have on the show today?
Oh, dude, did I find some stuff. So, interestingly, our guest of today, he lives in Rotterdam, but he is a supporter of the same soccer club I support as well, which is a club from Amsterdam. And he's passionate about running. He's passionate about eating steaks, and preferably big and expensive steaks. And I'm guessing Wagyu, Kobe beef, stuff like that. In his spare time, he does stuff with GPUs or GPU related, but not by itself. So he's supposedly to be a really cool and good crypto trader. So we know crypto and GPUs are quite related to each other. He's one of the co-founders of the Dutch Citrix user group. And he has a strong opinion on measuring productivity. Uh-huh. And I'm guessing that is one of the topics we're going to dive into today.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. And I mean, for those, if you haven't already heard, based on all these facts, this description of this person, if you don't know who our guest is of today, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit on what you do today? What's your current role?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, my name is Barry Schiffer. I work as a pre-sales consultant for EG Innovations. So I work with customers on monitoring end user experience, things like that. Well, thanks awesome. For having me today. Great introduction.
Well, what did it make sense?
It made sense.
Right on all yeah? effects. Good, excellent. So, I mean, Barry, thank you. Thank you for being on the show today. I have been so much looking forward on having a podcast recording with you. As you and I go back a long time, and I think the first time we proper met was when you and I and others founded the Digital User Group. And since then, you know, we've had separate paths, but we kept crossing and we keep seeing each other. And this time, you know, we're going to have a nice podcast on measuring productivity from IT performance. But before we go into the EUC stuff, I have to ask, how can a true Rotterdammer support a soccer club from Amsterdam? I mean, that must have caused some fights when you grew up, right? Or when you have a neighbor barbecue, how does that work out? There's some rivalry, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe we shouldn't have mentioned this. It's not good for my home security stuff and things like that. But I have one neighbor.
Your street credibility.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah, so I didn't grow up in Rotterdam, but in Zoetermeer. Sporting Ajax wasn't really much better in The Hague than it is in Rotterdam. Yeah, it's always been like this. Yeah.
All right. Well, it makes sense. I mean, I think supporting Ajax, the club we're referring to, is controversial regardless. I mean, I don't care about soccer, but hey.
Cool. So, you know, when talking about sports, you mentioned you're passionate about running, or I mentioned it. But that was born out of a necessity, right? Didn't you have like real ambitions to become a professional soccer player?
Yeah, but it was... I mean, probably like 80% of all kids in the Netherlands, they have that ambition, but it was very clear around 8-9 years that wasn't going to happen. So my talent doesn't match my enthusiasm, I would say. I played soccer on a, well, not mentionable level. till I was like 32, and then I had a knee injury, and I decided to stop at some point, and then I started running, and so now I'm still running.
There you go. You've been running ever since.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. So, all right. So, topic for today I chose was measuring performance and how that relates to productivity. And obviously, today you work for a vendor that offers like an IT performance solution. But how did you end up here, and why? I mean, I know. I've got to know you as an icon in the EUC community. You are a long-standing Citrix CTP, VMware. You've been a VMware VXpert, NVIDIA NGCA. You are a member of Team RGE, which stands for Remote and Graphics Expert. So quite a couple of titles. Can you take our audience on a journey of your career? Like, what was your when you came out of school? What was your dream? Besides playing for Ajax or related soccer clubs.
Yeah, so I've always done a lot of things with technical things, like working with computers. And I broke my first PC when I was like 8 or 9 years old. My dad had his first PC.
That's how it starts, right? Once you break it, that's the fun part. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I started rebuilding it, like rebuilding the MS-DOS menu, so that when he got home, he didn't know I actually broke it. He did know, but he was still proud that I somewhat built it again. So that was cool. And then my biggest dream at that time was becoming a fighter pilot. So I actually signed up for the, I see quite an
dude, I did the same. I did the actual same. So there, you mentioned that 80% of all probably boys want to become a professional soccer player. The other 20% want to become a jet fighter pilot.
Yeah, I wanted to become both. But that was probably because I knew early on that becoming a professional football player was not going to happen anyway. So, but I actually signed up for...
So the chance was bigger to become a jet fighter pilot, right?
And here I proved today. Wrong, but here we are today. So, no, I actually signed up for the... So when I was like 15, the Netherlands started the first Apache pilot program. And I actually signed up. I got all the papers at home. And I was like, oh, this is really tough. and so, but actually, I got the papers. And well, somehow that didn't work out either. Probably not talented enough either. But
that would have been something else, buddy. I mean, Apache pilot, that's wow.
Yeah, at that time it looked like fun, but then, well, if I would have signed up actually and got into the school and did all those things, then we actually started doing some wars and stuff afterwards. So probably not as fun as just flying around. And there's an actual funny story that I never flew a plane till I was like 35, and I was bored instantly. So I got this like this first flight lesson when I was 30 or 35, and we started a lesson, and like literally after 5 minutes I was bored as hell. I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't like it.
Buddy, I'm kind of glad to hear this, because you and flying, you know, that's my personal experience with you and flying is that something goes wrong. So it better be in the... You better not be in the driver's seat. But that's just my experience with you, Barry. Whoops, sorry guys. Let me reboot and try again.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Try again. Say something nice. So yeah, that's your opinion. I mean, let everyone else decide.
No, it's just, you know, whenever, so for the audience, we tend to go to similar conferences. You know, we fly to, usually it's a Citrix conference because we're for Citrix, but whether that's, you know, VMware or somewhere else, Pubform, ETH, we tend to fly. And on a couple of occasions, and we're making this bigger than it is, right? Because Barry had great flights, uneventful flights, but it tends to happen that either Barry's flight doesn't happen, he doesn't get his luggage or whatever. There's things happen, Barry. It's just
happens.
So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the fun thing is it happens to me, right? So I fly with, for example, Case. We drop off our luggage at the same time, and we pick it up in the US to drop it off again for the connecting flight, and we do that together. And then my luggage is lost and his is there. And I mean, it's funny. Right. But anyway, I haven't had any issues for the last year.
So. No, I can imagine. No, I'm one away. So you did not become a Apache pilot. Then what did you make? What happened? What's the rest of your career?
Yeah, now I'm here. Yeah, no, I just pursued like all my... technical enthusiasm, working with computers, technical things, and started working at a company called Syntegra, which was bought by British Telecom at some point, and just started at the help desk. Yeah, in Zoetermeer. And started on the help desk and just moved on to system administration, network administration. And well, now we're here.
Excellent. So I already referred to traveling to conferences and things like Perform and E2E and other conferences. We with a couple of others, we started the Digital User Group. That's a tough word. Dukker. But what was your first interaction with the community? I mean, when did you start presenting at conferences or just attending? And, you know, what was your motivation, for instance, to start Dukker? I mean, what are your thoughts on community?
Yeah, I think obviously being in this community, like with like-minded people and sharing the same interests, is a lot of fun. And there's an ability to grow on a personal level, on a technical level. I've worked with people from literally all over the world helping me out when I have issues with customers or things like that. So people I've actually, who I actually look at as friends in those communities. So I have a lot of fun just hanging around with other people from the same communities. So, yeah.
And then obviously you start as in, you know, one of the participants in a community. You find a lot of like-minded people, and as so many of us. What got you up on the stage? That must have been super scary.
Yeah, it's that thought of, I mean, you're working with a lot of products, and at the time I worked at a company where we tried a lot of new citrus products. Some work better than others, but you find that you gain a lot of knowledge on how to implement those products, how to configure it, tune it, and you find other people that are interested, and then at some point people just ask questions like, do you want to present? And you're like, okay, we're going to do it. And yeah, it's scary at first. I remember my first presentation was with Case at E2E. I didn't even start with presentations in Dutch, but we started in English. And that was super scary because, I mean, everyone knows that the E2E audience is not your typical day-to-day audience that would just sit down and listen and be nice. I mean, if you're going to tell a bullshit story, they are going to tell you and they're going to shout at you. So that was super scary, but I mean, I've always enjoyed it.
So a quick question in between, before we might head into the next topic. So in your current role, you're presenting in, I guess, English as a default, right? Because you have an international role. So if you take that experience and suddenly you have to present in Dutch, how is that for you?
Yeah, so I'm a pre-sales consultant for the Benelux. So I present in Dutch mostly. Then for the south of Belgium, we could present in French, but that wouldn't work out that well for me. So then we switched to English.
Un petit peu,
papa fume la pipe, and that was it.
Omelette du fromage.
Yeah. Oui, oui. So it's a mix. So we present in English and in Dutch. So I don't have a lot of issues switching between both.
Okay.
So we were just discussing like your career, right? You went from basically help desk at Syntegra BT into where you are today. When presenting at such conference or attending, I mean, obviously E2E performed previously E2E. Yes, they are a tough crowd. Then again, I find them super supportive. Was it an inflection point for you in your career, like attending / presenting at those conferences?
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a confidence boost, obviously, because you're on stage, people are listening, and then when you get the feedback that they like what you're talking about, and it gives you a confidence boost. And on the other hand, your network starts growing, people start to know your name, so it becomes easier to win customers or get hired by customers. So it helps a lot, I would think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I tend to agree, right? And I think also this is, you know, one of the good reasons to attend those community-driven events. I think vendor conferences are great. But then again, you know, community-driven conferences are probably better. So talking about community, you are a Citrix CTP since 2015, which yep. means you just got renewed. So that's 6 years in a row. What made you pursue this, right? And you know, like all those like VMware vExpert, NVIDIA, NGCA, all those badges of honors. So what made you pursue this? And did you get what you were hoping for? And maybe for the listeners, can you explain what those kind of programs entail, what does it mean?
Yeah, so I think it's a recognition for community work, the things you're presenting, and so it should always be a recognition of things you're doing. I don't think if you start pursuing like a CDP status or MVP status that you're probably doing it for the wrong reasons, right? So it has to be fun. So it's a recognition. So I'm proud of that recognition. And I think what I like what's the most value for me is to have that global network, to work with people from like literally all continents and all religions, and so everyone works in a different way. And by being able to collaborate with them, or you just learn a lot. So by collaborating with them, you just learn a lot about yourself and about how to work with other people and other people from different cultures and things like that. So I think that's the most most valuable thing about those communities. And obviously, to a certain extent, you're able to influence where companies take products, right? And I say to a certain extent because you're still one of the external advisors. I mean, it's not that you're if you give an opinion that they're going to do it, but you're able to just influence those decisions.
And I like that you said if you pursue it as a status, that's probably not the right reason. But you know, like you said, it's a recognition. It's like hearing that. I mean, and I think you're right. I mean, you getting at least a CDB status for 6 years, or you know, the badge of honor, is a recognition of your contribution and also your knowledge and your contributions to the conversations you probably had at Citrix.
Ingmar just briefly mentioned that you were or are part of or were part of the NGCA program, so NVIDIA's community program, and you're also part of Team RGE. So, and I already mentioned in your introduction, right? You have something a passion or an interest for GPUs, and in your case also for crypto mining or crypto trading, I guess. You are also heavily involved in RD Analyzer. So one of my favorite, I would say, community built tools, because that's how I see it. And one of the tools that I use most when tuning and tweaking user experience from a VDI perspective. So can you, for the listeners, can you explain a little bit about RD Analyzer and how you got there?
Yeah, so Remote Display Analyzer it's still a great tool for VDI tuning, for tuning the display protocol, and it's really a fun story about on how it started. So I was working with Bram Wolf, obviously, at the time. So we worked for the same company, and we were both working on different projects, but we had the same issue, right? So Citrix has a display protocol, like VMware has one as well. And there are a lot of things you can tune and tweak and look at to just see if it performs in the best way possible. But to find out how which settings were applied and how it was actually performing was a bit hard with the default tools that came with the product. So we actually just started with like the question, like, which protocols actually being used now for these users. We didn't know. There was no way of finding that out. So we just created a PowerShell script, and that PowerShell script gave some output on a CLI, and that was it. And then it started growing on us, like, okay, this is really cool. So we started using it internally, like 5 or 6 people were using it, and everyone thought, like, oh, this is quite cool. And then Bram, obviously, is a great developer as well. He created AppVentix, formerly known as FV Scheduler. So then I said, like, how hard could it be to just make a nice application out of this? I mean, I'm not a developer. I don't know. I always think, like, it's easy. So it took him some time. and then we just said, like, oh, this is really cool. So we went to E2E. And we just showed the tool there, and just showed it, like, so we did some tests and looked at the different protocols and how you could use them. And we used RD Analyzer just to prove, like, the amount of frames per second and the encoder that was used. And then we got a lot of questions. And then it hit us, like, well, we like it, we use it, but this would probably work out well for everyone working with display protocols. And then we we started with Citrix, and then we added VMware, and then the Microsoft community looked at it and liked it, and then we added RDP, and it just blew out of proportions, right? So there's now a team of 3 developers working on it. So we added Rodi Kosse and Ryan to the development team, So they're working on lots of cool new features as well, hopefully coming out soon. But it really was a great journey into creating a PowerShell script to a product, right? It's now productized. We have a website, or they have a website. Really fun.
I think it's just super cool that you started with like, hey, I have a challenge. I have an issue. I don't know what protocol is being used or what codec, what setting, and let's start developing it. Let's not wait for someone else to do it, but let's just do it.
Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, just like others, when I saw, I was like, hey, this is, why did no one else came up with, which is a great idea. I mean, and by the way, it's not just that you give insights in what you're using, like what coding, what setting, and that's already like was a massive, or still is a massive pain in the ass to figure out what's being used. And you give like metrics like frame rates and all that stuff. You can also see it, right? So you can see based on what setting has been applied, what protocol, what encoder. So this is what the end user would experience, right? So this is the result of that setting, and obviously the combination of those two. That's cool. And then the last part, which is, I found that super interesting, and actually that it's allowed, like as in no one stopped you, which for good reasons, you can change it on the fly. You can change protocols or
in real time.
Like encoders, like, so, but what if I would use a different coding? What if I have a different resolution or color depth, whatever? You can change it on the fly. That's super cool. I mean, that gives you so much advantage in seeing what you do, but also in the amount of time you save by doing that. That's just super awesome.
Yeah, and a really fun story behind that is that we were never pursuing to do that, to be able to change it live from remote display analyzer. It was just one of those cases where we looked at the output from remote display analyzer and the output from Citrix Director, and there was a difference between the two. And we looked at it and we didn't understand what was happening, because you can only use one encoder, right? So if the one of the tools says you're using this, the other one says you're using that, then there's something wrong. So we went in and we started looking at like how we into the registry where the group policies are applied, and looked at which encoders should have been used and what is actually using. And then we saw some numbers there, like a 0, 1, 2 that defines which encoder is being used. And we changed it. And then we saw like the remote display analyzer switching without logging off or logging on. And we were like, huh? And we tried it again and again and again. And we were like, hey, we didn't know this was possible. And so that's how that functionality started. I think it's a fun story.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's born out of like an accident, basically.
Yeah.
But aren't like all great inventions like, grow on us, like, hey, oh, whoops, I blew something up, or like, there's a chicken, let's eat it. Oh, it's actually great. It's actually great. I mean, someone's got to try it first, so I'm glad you ate the chicken. So, RD Analyzer.
Yeah.
That's a community tool, right?
Yeah.
So everyone can just use it for free.
Yeah, so there still is a community version which can be used for free. And there are some advanced features like switching the protocol live and things like that. And there's a paid version for that as well. Yeah.
Cool.
Which honestly costs like nothing.
No.
It's bizarre. Every consultant, every VDI admin, every person who does something with remoting protocols should just have this tool in his toolbox, his or her toolbox. It's essential, and it's the small investment you do has a huge impact on getting the best user experience and performance possible. Hey, is this a segue?
It is.
I'm
so glad you're doing this. Yeah, I mean, this was definitely one of those segues where, I mean, we wanted to switch gears a bit in today's world, because obviously you have a long track record, 20 years. We're not going to discuss age, but you've been an IT architect, pre-sales consultant in the UC space. And I know you as a critical but fair professional that understands the potential of what software products can bring to an organization, right? Because you're a CDP and, hey man, you are a product manager on your own. It took you a while to join a vendor.
Yes, I was thinking about joining a vendor for quite some time. I mean, we have discussed this earlier on as well, but I was really looking for like something new, something cool, which I think is cool. And not one of the greater enterprises, right? So I didn't want to go and work for one of the bigger enterprises, and I was really looking for a place where I could just start working for a vendor, but still do a lot of community work or do a lot of evangelism work as well, and build out a community. So I was really looking for a place where I could do that. And yeah, so, and on the other hand, I've always been interested in performance and offering that best user experience and tweaking the little things and getting the most out of an IT investment. So monitoring has always been somewhat of an interest to me. I mean, I've started remote display analyzer with Bram, of course, before. And so I worked with a lot of those tools just based on the consultancy work I did at SLTM before. And then when I was still at SLTM, we were looking for an end user experience monitoring solution. So we were already using data center monitoring with a product called Nagios, probably well known. But this really did like on and off monitoring. So is a server on or off? It didn't give us a lot of information about how users are actually experiencing the IT environment. So then we started working with EG, and I was really amazed by the amount of information that EG was offering out of the box. Right, so you don't want to buy a monitoring tool and then have to spend like years to just tune it and create dashboards and things like that. So the out-of-the-box information that EG was giving us and was really interesting to me. So we started working with that, and my interest was growing. And then at some point I thought like, well, let's see if I can start joining EG. So I joined EG in May of last year. And
during the pandemic, today, you joined a vendor, right?
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, big balls changing like in the mid of a pandemic. You didn't know we're actually start of the pandemic.
Yeah, so at the time when I signed up with EG, I think COVID was just starting to spread. I mean, it was already spreading, but we just found out it was spreading outside of Asia, I guess. And so I already signed up. And well, yeah, I mean, it gets you a bit nervous along the way. I mean, there are a couple of months in between when you sign up and then you actually start working there. So the idea was to go to our headquarters to get trained and really get to know everyone. That didn't happen, of course. I mean, still waiting for that. So work at home for pretty much the most time of the last couple of months, but still fun.
Of your career at EG. So I was actually doing some research on EG innovations. I wanted to know, like, EG, I mean, what is EG? Okay, apparently, I'm not sure if you know, but EG is short for Electronic Gurkha. And this refers to the soldiers in Gurkha units, which are originally from Nepal, that serves in the British Army. So I figured you want to be an Apache pilot. So there's a good connection there. But apparently no. So the performance monitoring focuses on safeguarding IT applications and infrastructure in much the same way that Gurkha soldiers guarded territory. So what I wanted, obviously, I'm making this up, this connection to your Apache pilot, because I didn't know before. But what is your vision on performance monitoring that focuses on safeguarding IT applications and infrastructures, and how that relates to WVD, Owingu, Zen Desktop, CVAT, I have to say? What's the current landscape?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at monitoring and user experience monitoring or EUC monitoring, I mean, there are a lot of terms flying around these days. You have to think about what are you monitoring. So we can talk about digital experience monitoring or EUC monitoring, but What I like about EG is that we are monitoring that entire space. So we're not just monitoring the digital workspace, like the VDI or RDS desktop. We're monitoring the actual application, the application backend, how users are interacting with the applications. So we are literally monitoring that entire stack of functionality that a user is using. And that interests me the most because in the end, I mean, it's not about offering a Windows desktop to a user. I mean, a Windows, there's nothing you do with a Windows desktop. You start an application and then you start doing your work. So you in my vision, you have to monitor that entire experience from within that one monitoring solution.
So what I wonder is where's the safeguarding piece, right? I mean, obviously I was referring to some military collision, but how are you safeguarding the IT performance, or basically not the IT performance, but the performance for the end user? I mean, I guess that's the key focus here, right? You want to make sure that the user gets the best performance or the best experience, and performance is one of the aspects there. How can...
Yeah, so I mean, I think the key difference between EG and other monitoring solutions is that what we call converged monitoring. And what I mean with converged monitoring is that we monitor application performance and IT infrastructure from within that one tool. So within the monitoring space, you would see vendors that are doing APM, application performance monitoring, and you have vendors that are doing IT infrastructure monitoring. We do both from within that one product. So it's one single pane of glass. So we are actually able to look at that user experience. So how is an application performing when I click on a button within an application? How fast does the application respond? And we can correlate that data to the underlying IT infrastructure. So we can actually show that entire IT topology and show this component is having an impact on that user experience. And then we can drill down into, is it the CPU? Is it memory? Okay, if it's the CPU, what is the CPU doing?
That's cool. So you can basically tie the computational performance, how many CPU cycles, how many memory, how many, like metrics. You can tie that to the perceived performance of a user. Like, hey, yeah, I can see it takes so long to do this click. And actually say, so this is the outcome, like for the end user. So that's good to know for whoever IT administrator or IT manager that wants to know. But you can also support in the diagnosis of, okay, but I mean, you do monitoring not just to get a nice green dashboard. You want to know that it's good, and if it's not, how to fix it. Is that the right interpretation of what you do?
Yeah. I think that the trend analysis that we do will help you to prevent issues. So we can actually see that trend of a transaction within an application that's slowing down, and then link it to, let's say, a CPU that's becoming congested or something like that. So then we can prevent it. But at least you want to know at the instant that a user is experiencing a slow performance, you want to know instantly that's happening. But for us, that's not enough. We have a vision, and when they started the company 20 years ago, the question was, why is my application slow? And still today, we are still focusing and developing based on that question. So we don't just want to say that application is slow or that component is giving you some issues. We want to tell you why the application is slow so you can fix it. And that's really, really powerful. And it takes a lot of development and a lot of technical knowledge. So that's also why you see that within EG, like 60 to 70% of all staff is in development. Because it takes a lot of time to develop for all of the components you would see in an IT infrastructure, because you need to know, you need to have functionality for every component in that topology to say it's this component and this is happening.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting is that, and EG is not the only vendor focusing on that, is, you know, monitoring vendors are focusing on measuring productivity, or people are nowadays even calling it user satisfaction. And it's a topic we've been discussing in the Throwdown episodes a couple of times. Now, it's a double-edged sword, right? So where do you draw the line when it comes to monitoring and linking that to productivity? And is this a technical challenge or just, you know, a lack of trust?
Well, I really think that, I mean, I have a strong opinion about monitoring user productivity with a technical solution. I mean, it's, I mean, we're Dutch, so it's complete and utter. I mean, it's moving your mouse is not equal to being productive, right? So sometimes you have to just sit back, walk around, and you have the best thoughts of the day, right? So I really do think that as a monitoring vendor, you should stay away from, is a user being productive, right? If you want to build reports that says, oh, this user logged on at this time, logged off at that time, and there's so much idle time. I mean, yeah, these are metrics you can pull out of our solution, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't say anything about being productive. What you can do is actually look at IT services and say, how are IT services impacting that user experience or impacting productivity? And that's interesting to know. Because if you can say, I mean, the bigger retailers like Amazon and for the Netherlands, bol.com, know this, right? So if your shopping cart is this slow, then this amount of people will drop off in the shopping cart. So it's pretty easy to just say, okay, if the performance is slow, it will cost you this amount of money. For enterprise IT or office automation IT, that's a little bit difficult. But if your organization is on a certain maturity level where you can say, I mean, if we know that this application is giving users issues, then it impacts their productivity. I mean, that's something we can work with. Then we can say, oh, we need these and these KPIs. Like let's say this transaction can take at most 3 seconds and otherwise we're impacting productivity. That's something we can measure. And then we can say this amount of time on average per user is the application was too slow. Or, I mean, then you can actually work with that monitoring solution. But just measuring, like, is a user productive or not? I mean, no way.
So then, would it be fair to say that maybe this is just a way of sexy selling your monitoring solution? I mean, the way I hear you say this, and by the way, I totally agree, you're not measuring productivity, you're measuring productivity limitations or measuring productivity bottlenecks, right? You can measure if there's a bottleneck. If you can measure the performance of an application and say, hey, it takes like 3 seconds to click on file and then open, and it's very likely that this will impact like the experience and the productivity of the user. Isn't this just a sexy way of saying like, hey, we can measure productivity and therefore we're getting the deal?
Yeah, I haven't come across many customers that are looking to buy our software to measure productivity, right? So the customers I'm talking to are just looking for a solution to optimize and to stabilize their IT investment, right? So I think maybe it's a bit of a cultural thing as well. So I know, without going into details, I know other continents where that question pops up every now and then. But for me, I'm lucky, I think, that I don't have to go into that kind of conversation. I haven't seen it.
I think it actually would be fun to have that conversation, like understanding the question behind the question. Why would you want to measure productivity? How can I help you actually achieve that? And maybe you should not measure. I think you're entirely right. If you measure like clicks or mouse movements, that's not a metric that tells you anything about productivity. It's about interaction with the screen. So the conversation, I think the conversation would be cool. Yeah,
so I read a lot on, I mean, there were quite some vivid Twitter conversations on the subject, because I've seen some vendors that were actually marketing this as cool functionality. I just think I'm happy that I'm not in those conversations, because I mean, I would get annoyed quite quickly. I would think.
But, you know, one of the things that I find really interesting is that so you guys really focus on getting a broad understanding of the entire end user computing stack, right? Yep. So from, let's say, iron until in-depth information around the application. Yep. And the whole stack in between. Now, one of the things that we are seeing is that the end-user computing stack is changing. So identity nowadays is part of it. We're seeing that you know, being able to access data as a service with tools both Citrix, Microsoft, VMware are developing. You know, being able to collaborate, to have unified communications. An end user requires those tools nowadays, certainly in the time we're in right now, in the middle of a second lockdown. This is part of their stack. So what is, or how are you seeing the future when looking at EG's services? And we talked about productivity, but end user experience, end user satisfaction is going to change in the next couple of years. And how is EG going to cope with those changes?
Yeah, really good question. So I already mentioned that we are working based on that question, like, why is my application slow? So if you look back at the last 20 years of the EG product evolution, then you can see that our vision or that question that has not changed. The only thing that changed is that delivery model around that application. So there was at some point there was virtualization. So we added virtualization monitoring, so we could still give you that answer about why is my application slow. Then we added cloud. Then we would see SaaS applications. Then the whole trend started about user experience, digital experience monitoring, DevOps solutions. Like the DevOps world is exploding with new startups. So we're looking into that direction. So if you look at the future, then you would probably see us doing more in regard to the whole DevOps product stack. We already support things like Git, Kubernetes, Docker, things like that. So that the amount of components there will grow. But the thing you're mentioning with micro apps is also pretty interesting. Like, how are you going to monitor how they consume micro apps? And we are looking into that without going into too much detail. But it's an interesting world, and that application is changing. If you look at those micro apps that are available from a portal solution, and you just click on "I want to approve someone's PDO request." Things like that. That should be monitored as well. Like how many users are actually using that? How fast is that response? Is that service available that on that backend? Because the application is still there. We're just pulling that user functionality towards that portal function with the micro app. So we still have to monitor the backend application to see if it's still working.
Now, one of the things that's really interesting what you just mentioned is accepting a PDO request. So what you mentioned here is self-service, right? So we're introducing a lot of self-service in the end-user computing stack because, honestly, you don't want to bother IT with repetitive tasks or with things that you could offer through self-service. Plus, you want to empower the employee as much as possible. One of the things, so I just ordered a new car a couple of weeks ago, and I have in depth an overview of the whole production process, and the same thing with my utilities company. I want to see what I am paying for, how I'm spending my money, and internally I'm a home automation fan, so I have smart meters within my whole home, and I know what my lab is doing. Or stuff like that. So, are you seeing that end users are nowadays, wanting to see that, wanting to get insights about stuff like that as well? You know, they have a great user experience, or they don't. Do you want to offer end users the ability to see that for themselves?
Well, I was waiting, and we were debating like who's going to ask the next question offline, and it was actually in the same line, right? We've seen the consumerization of IT for a while now, and I think the name hasn't been used, but it's still ongoing. Especially because of the pandemic, you've seen, the workforce is remote by default, right? It is a distributed workforce. I think especially now you will have more and more of the gig economy, right? People are fed up with being tied and associated with an employee. So core of the question is, should we empower employees to see what's happening? This is so far this has been an IT toy, right? It's a tool for IT, and if you call the help desk and say it's slow, they will say, huh, interesting, let me look at it. Why isn't it like a self-service tool for employees? And it's an open-ended question. Do you think that's like part of monitoring, like in the trend? Is that something for EG? Is it utter bullshit what we're saying here?
No, I would never say that. But so if I look at it from an EG perspective, I mean, we have dashboards for every stakeholder in that IT organization. So one of the stakeholders could be the employees, or a service manager, or a CIO, and we give them information that is relevant to them. So for employees, we can create a dashboard where we can just say this IT service is up or is down, or or there's a performance impact, but that's it. Giving them access to do like self-service troubleshooting into their performance, I would just say, I mean, let's make sure that we give IT the tools to make sure that they don't have to look at it. They don't have to think about it. And just give them a dashboard where they can see, okay, I'm having a problem. Do they know about it? I mean, that would be as far as I would go.
I mean, it would be nice, but what if like I access a SaaS application and I think, you know, this is horrible. If I can see like, well, but that's because of my Wi-Fi, or maybe it's because of my internet connection, or maybe it's because the SaaS service is like over, like if you want to do your taxes like these days, it's kind of overloaded, the service. Just getting that amount of information, it gives you like understanding, and that also, because you understand what's happening, it's like, all right, well, at least I know. Right? So you're getting, I think users, employees, or people, let's say people are less frustrated if they know what's happening.
Well, do you guys know what yak shaving is?
Is this a different
topic? Do I want to know? Or?
Yeah. No, it's the exact same topic. So imagine you wake up in the morning, you want to have a sandwich, a breakfast with a sandwich with eggs. And you open up the fridge, you find out you don't have eggs, right? So you go out, you jump into the car, although you think you're out of gas or almost out of gas. So you need to go to the gas station. At the gas station, you fill her up with gas. You find out that you didn't bring your wallet. Oh, crap, I need to... So you leave your car there, you go back to your home for your wallet. Well, and the whole story ends up, and at the end, you're shaving a yak. That's yak shaving. So I guess as an end user, you want to avoid yak shaving and just want to know that before the whole crap starts, you need to fill up your car, or you need to have enough money on the bank, or stuff like that. So it's I run my a bandwidth check every, let's say, half an hour. On my Ziggo, my ISP connection, just to know why performance sometimes sucks. Wouldn't it make sense for the end user to get some sort of analytics themselves as well? Just, you know, tiny metrics. Your connection is good or not good, or application is responding slowly. That's due to the fact that the cloud is having challenges, or, you know, stuff like that.
Actually, while you say that, Citrix actually has like one of those indicators. When you're in the VDI, it's like your experience sucks because your bandwidth sucks. It's actually quite nice.
No, but now we're talking about a specific vendor.
Obviously,
I think that's one of the strong points of EG. You're independent to any vendor. You're talking to the big EUC vendors. You're integrating with the big cloud platforms. You're integrating with open source solutions like Docker and Kubernetes and all sorts of DevOps tools. Now, giving like tiny insights to the consumer of a certain platform, I would say totally makes sense. Yeah. I'd love to have those insights.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, I think. So, yeah, I mean, having that like this little tray icon that will just tell you like, oh, your Wi-Fi is crap, and that's why your application performance is slow, totally makes sense.
Totally. Is it a good idea if I like submit a patent right now for that?
I would.
That doesn't exist, right?
Oh, I would think there's a patent for this. I mean, okay. I know.
All right. So I have one final question for this episode. Unless you wanted to go more deep in the weeds of monitoring, but I think we are. I think we made it. So we have a new tradition at the UC Digest podcast second season, in which we will ask. I'll let the previous guest ask you a question. So you were not entirely prepared, but on a previous episode, we had someone from Awingu, and they asked you, without knowing you were on, ask you this question. Buddy, what is your biggest insight in regards to 2020? And it can be personal, it can be work-related, perhaps something you've learned, but what is your biggest insight when it comes to the year 2020?
Yeah, hard question, of course. I mean, there are many things. I mean, we've seen COVID. I've switched jobs in the middle of a pandemic, started working for a vendor. I think for me, the biggest realization of last year is that we were living quite an untroubled life, right? So especially we from Europe and most of us have never seen war up close or being limited in whatever freedom we have. And I think that realization of that things can be different, that's quite a big thing. Not sure how I'm going to use that later on, of course, when we are finally done with all the COVID troubles. But one thing I can mention for me personal in my personal life is that, of course, I mean, a lockdown isn't fun. Working at home all day, all week, all year is not always as fun, especially when you can't bring your kids to school or things like that. But what I've realized, what I think is a really positive thing, is that because we were not traveling, you get so much time. I mean, I've had so much time to just do sports, to just wake up in the morning and not having to hurry with getting the kids to school and eat and then go sit in a traffic jam for 2 hours. So all of the time we just got from not having to travel is something I've really enjoyed. I've spent more time with my kids over the last year than in the years before. So that's something I really want to keep doing in the future.
Cool. Great answer. Yeah. I start to appreciate things more in life, things which were given. I mean, this is now your turn to ask a question to our next guest. And I don't know who that's going to be. So what would you ask our next guest of the podcast?
Yeah. One thing I'm interested in is what is the third thing you're going to do when all this pandemic thing is over? And I'm asking
the third thing.
So I'm asking for the third thing, because I mean, the first and second are easy. You're going to your direct family and you're going to a bar with your friends, right? So the first two are literally easy. But what is the third thing that you're going to do differently than what we're doing now?
What would do you, Ingmar?
It's not an easy answer. I mean, I think the bar, well, seeing friends is obviously in the top two.
Right, so seeing friends and family is top two, bar top two. What's the third one?
I would say this is a wrong answer, but I would probably want to travel to the US and see my coworkers.
Oh, yes. Well,
or
no
conference or something. See other people outside of this. I mean, all top three is seeing people, family, friends, and then. Yeah, I mean, whether it's a conference or just visiting the office, seeing people who I've been working with the last year, just all remote. Man, I've missed that.
Dude, I saved so much money on traveling. I would probably just buy a ticket to go to Necker Island from, what's his name again? The entrepreneur who started Virgin.
Oh, no.
No. You started Virgin Virgin Air and Virgin Cola, Virgin Records, and
putting me in the spot here.
Steve.
Brent. No.
Steve.
No.
Branson.
Was it Steve?
No, it was not.
Branson.
Richard.
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. Yeah. Yes. Even yeah, I think it costs around like 35,000 euros a day. But hey, you have an awesome island, right?
Fuck yo, and how much did you save with not traveling? By the way, I didn't save any money. I just spent it all on toys and gadgets and stuff. But anyhow, okay, so I think it's an excellent question. I'm going to, maybe I want to revisit my answer, but there's no opportunity because this is all recorded. Anywho, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of the EC Digest with Buddy Schiffern. Buddy Schiffern. I should say this right. We hope you enjoyed this snack as much as we did, as we tried to serve you the right amount of EUC for your appetite. If you have anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on the social channels or by email on podcast@euc-digest.com. Right. Cheers. Bye.